I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. Happy 2024!
Happy New Year!
First show of the year. Oh, it's only been 2024 for a couple hours. What better way is it than spending it with you, producer Freddie behind the glass, bright and early?
Yes,
oh,
of
my goodness. But you know what? We got to be here because we have a duty to our audience. There's so much going on.
Yep.
We had a full week of Serie A, Juventus beating Roma, Inter dropping points. We have Man City winning, Manchester United losing, Chelsea nearly losing. But we got to start with Fulham and Arsenal. And, Jose, I went. I saw an Arsenal team that looked really bad. They actually, if this was like 20 years ago, I would say, oh, they were out on the town over the holidays. Now, we know this is not the case.
No.
But Arteta agrees with me. He said it was one of the worst performances of the year.
Yeah, and I agree with you too. There's the defeat against West Ham where I think Arsenal were the better team, and on another day they win that game. And then there's this Fulham game where Fulham deserved to win. They were better than Arsenal. Arsenal were really below par in every sense of it. They're defending, they're attacking, the lack of sharpness, the lack of energy, technical mistakes pretty much everywhere, bad passes, bad touches. Despite even taking the lead so early, so you think, okay, they took the lead, they've done the hardest bit, even away from home, now they can control a little bit. They could not even do that. So it's one win in 5-9 in the league, which is worrying, of course, but others have gone through bad patches too, and that doesn't mean you won't recover and go again, but that was bad.
So we saw Raul Jimenez score, obviously. I was struck by the fact that there is a little bit of kind of... The man's been on a journey, right? Raul Jimenez, obviously, with his serious injury, which he suffered against Arsenal, coming back and scoring. I was struck by how Fulham with really nothing to play for. Because look, let's call a spade, right? One of the amazing things about the Premier League is that you have these players who put out the effort and the games are competitive when in fact they have nothing to play for. Fulham are not going to go down this season.
No.
And they're not going to qualify for Europe.
No.
And there are a lot of teams in that situation. Fulham, Palace, Wolves, you know, list goes on and on, right? They have good players. And I kind of feel like big games, Arsenal to town. Yeah, it's not so much a derby thing because, again, I say this with the greatest of respect to Fulham, maybe the nicest fan base, but they're nice, right? Craven Cottage is not Fortress Craven Cottage. It's not welcome to hell.
It's not intimidating, though.
But to the players, they're like, oh, look, here's Arsenal. We're on TV. We're playing, you know, the team that's at the top of the table, should be the top of the table. I think for the individuals as well, I think it kind of gave them an extra gear.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, and they were up for it. You could tell clearly. Even when they took they conceded the goal after 5 minutes, you could see they were going for it. I just think this is a good little team. Nothing special, nothing particular. I mean, Palinha, I think, is probably their best player, and he won't be there for long because he's going to go to a bigger club. So yeah, it's a nice team, but this is a team that Arsenal should be beating. Mm-hmm. Even away from home, they should win. This is not a good result at all.
I gave you a chance to praise Arsenal. No. Praise Fulham.
I did.
But you pointed out Arsenal's weaknesses, and I don't think you can take for granted 3 points away from home when the opposition have no pressure on them. But you're right. There were a lot of flaws with Arsenal. It's easy to go and pick out individuals. Martinelli and Havertz, I think, are two obvious ones.
Mm-hmm.
There is a center forward issue, which we'll get to, which I've been talking about all season, at the risk of repeating myself. I am also wondering, against teams that play the way Fulham play, which, you know, is going to be a lot of teams, I'm wondering about Declan Rice sitting in front of the back four. And I know we disagree here, and I'm not saying Declan Rice shouldn't be playing. And look, when he played for, he should obviously be starting. He's one of Arsenal's most important players.
Yeah.
I am wondering, though, about that position, distribution-wise, creativity-wise. When he played for West Ham, that was a counter-attacking team. Right?
Yeah.
So most of his job was shielding, and then he could go forward. We could make his quality.
That's fair.
His quality count. I wonder when he's back there, and I think Arteta shares this view a little bit because we've seen certain games where Jorginho's played there, and Rice has played further forward alongside Odegaard. I'm starting to say maybe Jorginho can't do it every game. Maybe Jorginho's not the right guy, and maybe he doesn't want to give up on Havertz. But I'm wondering whether in games like this they wouldn't be more balanced with a guy who can, a guy who's more of a deep lying playmaker than Rice. Put Rice alongside Odegaard, allow him to break forward, allow him to make his decisions when he needs to.
Yeah, no, and I hear you. I just think that when you play against a team who will look at hitting you in transitions, like West Ham, like Fulham at home, then the lack of mobility from Jorginho maybe is what Arteta wants Rice there, because Rice is so mobile, he goes everywhere, he's so strong physically, he runs fast, etc. So that's the only reason.
You make a good point, right? If obviously Rice makes you much more counterattack proof than Jorginho does. Although, by the way, this thing with Jorginho's mobility and stuff, and gets a little bit constantly overpaid, but whatever.
No, but like, for example, there's one, just quickly, there's a counterattack from Bowen against West Ham. There's no way Jorginho can catch him. Rice did catch him.
Yeah, no. So
for that instance, I love Jorginho. You know how much I love Jorginho.
I will say, Rice is a better player than Jorginho. But I do wonder, though, if you're 1-0 up away from home, and we've said it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? And you've got a ton of games. We can debate how deep the squad is. He likes to play the same people. I mean, I think 9 out of 11 are always the same for Arsenal, if fit, right?
Yeah.
You know, the only question mark maybe occasionally left back, and that other position, Havertz, whatever, Fabio Vieira, if he were fit, maybe. But you're 1-0 up. And I'm wondering, is there a way to manage the game that actually makes you, so you don't have to be terrified about the transition and what does it mean with Jorginho? And I wonder about that, because look, Arsenal did continue to create chances, right, at 1-0 up. And I get Arteta's idea that, look, it's fine, we'll outscore the opposition, we'll create more chances. But I do wonder if Rice is playing that deep because you're concerned about the transition. Maybe set up in a way where you don't have to be so concerned about the transition.
Yeah.
Maybe. Do you see what I'm saying? Maybe don't commit so many, especially once you've taken the lead. Because you know what? Arsenal can play on the counter too. Arsenal have very fast.
I mean, their goal, to be fair, comes for that low of space for Martinelli.
The chance Martinelli missed later and whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there, whether also to preserve energy a little bit, maybe there's a case to be made to manage games, especially if you're not going to rotate as much.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Although I think Arteta wants them to recover the ball as high as possible, that counter press to be very efficient, and then go again, basically, and have those waves. So when Fulham or West Ham have recovered the ball from you, but they're in their own half, they can't get out of there. So that's why you're there. But then if they do, like on their first goal, where Tom Kenny has literally the M1 to run into and then cross the ball for Raul Jimenez, then I think this is also too easy in a way.
I think the other challenge in a game like this, when we talk about playmaking, ball management, and whatever, it's one thing when Zinchenko plays the way he's supposed to play and he's at left back and he steps into midfield. If Rice is there, you've got Zinchenko helping him, and Zinchenko is a midfielder. He's not a left back, right?
Yeah,
he's got those skills.
Yeah, completely.
When you've got Kivior doing that, or even my man Tomoyasu, it's different. They're not going to have the quality, the creativity, the passing that Zinchenko brings.
Kivior tried, we saw that.
It's not his thing, right?
No, definitely not.
He's a left-footed center back.
Right? Yeah,
and
true.
He likes that. I want to touch upon the Havertz situation. I understand the grand plan of the 4-1-4-1. I understand the plan of the waves. It's what Man City do.
Mm.
But Man City, I would argue, obviously have more quality, but they also have more dimensions to them. I think they can go direct much more effectively. And look, it's easier to do, too, when you've got a center forward who actually scores a lot of goals.
Yeah,
not Gabriel Jesus. I'm wondering, at some point, should you come around to the idea that maybe Havertz should be playing up front? Maybe when Fabio Vieira is back or whatever, that maybe to have that... Because, look, they're being linked right now with Ivan Toney in the media. I would find this very strange. I almost wonder if it's not Ivan Toney getting on the phone to people and saying, like, oh, look, I'd love to play for Arsenal. I'm like, yeah, sure you would, Ivan. But the fact is, you haven't played in
8 months.
In 8 months. you need to, and I'm sure he's fit training.
Yeah,
whatever,
he's trained.
But he's not match fit. He's not match integrated. He's a completely different profile from Nketiah.
Which is what they would need. If you think if Arsenal go and sign a striker, is to bring a different profile than the ones they already have. Otherwise, it makes no sense.
Right. But equally, if you bring a guy, it's one thing to bring a guy with a different profile and say, hey, he's going to be on the bench and he's going to come on. And we're going to, you know, for when we need to lump balls and have the aerial attack. But if you're going to do that, you already have Havertz, who I think is very good in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's Havertz's role. And then I don't need to bring in Ivan Toney.
Yeah.
Bringing Ivan Toney in to start means having to relearn how to press, how to win the ball high. I'm not saying he didn't do that at Brentford. But between the fact that he's been out for 8 months, between the fact that it's a different profile. I mean, that's a heavy lift.
Yeah, and I think he's expensive too. And also, I think there's... I mean, I don't know him at all. I want to hope for him that he's never going to do the gambling again like he did. But what if he did? You know, what if he does? Sorry. What if he does it again? How long will be the suspension then? So what, you take him and then 6 months, a year down the line, he does it again and then... So I don't know. So I think for Toney, as great as he is... There's maybe a few red flags there and there for all the reasons that we mentioned. I think Arsenal, like all the top clubs, will be looking at the transfer market, but more maybe if there's an opportunity than anything else, because they spent big in the summer already. And I think Arteta also, and we will discuss the number nine, and we disagree on the number nine. I just think that you also, I know they've lost two in a row and they've won one in five, and it's a bad spell. Pep and City had one win in six in the Premier League before winning back-to-back against Everton and Sheffield United. This is Everton and Sheffield United, right? I think Arsenal were also, with that squad, top of the table at some point, looking really good. So it doesn't mean that all is bad. Because if they almost finished, well, they were top at Christmas, so first half of the season, with this squad, they can well win the Premier League with this squad as well.
There's no question. And as we record this, and Liverpool play in a few hours... But as we record this right now on Monday morning, on New Year's Day morning, yeah. By the way, where we're some of the few people working, they're 2 points out.
Yeah.
Like, which means that...
They're still very much in it.
The next game, they could be top of the table again, yeah. Right? So that's the reality check. I do wonder, though, and I said, maybe the answer is internal with the center forward. I mean, we'll move on to the center forward thing. I completely understand what Gabriel Jesus brings to the table. But, and it felt like, obviously, last season, Arsenal didn't have any issue scoring goals and whatever, and Martinelli scored a lot of goals, and Saka scored a lot of goals, Odegaard especially.
Yeah.
This year, it seems to me that if I play Odegaard with Havertz, it's not always obvious. And seeing them in person, by the way, as I did at Craven Cottage, you realize that there's a lot of awareness, a lot of chemistry that goes into. Neither one wants to get into the way of the other, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that takes balance and that takes time because the skill sets in some ways are comparable. On top of that, and I remind people, Kai Havertz is learning a new position that he hasn't played in 2 years.
Yeah.
Kai Havertz played almost exclusively at center forward in the last sort of 12 to 18 months at Chelsea, right? I wonder, maybe the answer's in-house. Maybe Arsenal center forward in certain situations should be Kai Havertz. What stops him from doing that?
Nothing. He played there a little bit in this first half of the season, but I think and maybe Arteta likes to play him as an 8 because right now Fabio Vieira is injured. Emi Smith Rowe, I think, could be a good 8 potentially. It's still
Trossard, maybe less so.
Trossard, as we saw against West Ham, maybe less so.
More of an impact.
But yeah, and again, this is it's a difficult position, and Granit Xhaka, for all his flaws and all the criticism that people and even probably us have had through the years, had just mastered that position in the Arteta philosophy and the way this team is playing so well that I think he was always going to take time for anybody to come and replace him. And Kai is a very different player than Xhaka too. So instead of just maybe going for a very similar replacement to Xhaka in terms of profile, stats, underlying stats, all of that, they just chose slightly different direction in Kai Havertz. And maybe they signed Kai also to be able to play as a 9, as a 10, replacing Odegaard if Odegaard is not playing, if he's injured or something like that. But then that was also a bit risky, to be fair. So I think Havertz has improved massively, and I think he would have been very, very useful against West Ham in a game like that before this Fulham game. Fulham, when the whole team is not playing well, Kai Havertz is not going to play well anyway. But yeah, I agree with you. I would like to see him as a 9-2-9 again.
You said Havertz has improved massively?
I think so. I think he had 3 goals in the last 5 games before his suspension against West Ham.
What's... So, maybe I got this completely wrong, but Havertz, before he moved to Chelsea, I looked at him and I said, this person's a piece of clay, right? I've used that term before. This person can be molded into something because the skill set is remarkable, right?
Yeah.
He's got tons of quality. He's a big boy. He's a big boy who likes being physical, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He really has a nasty streak to him, but in a good way, not a bad way, right? He's not a sprinter, but he gets around the pitch very, very well for a man his size.
Yeah.
So it's a question of where to put him. And I kind of feel that at Chelsea, he played center forward by default, almost, when you had revolving door managers. Then that's where you end up. But... Does Arteta have an idea? I mean, obviously he's trying him in different situations. If Arteta were here and we gave him truth serum,
mm-hmm.
and he said, are you certain what Kai Havertz's best position is? Would he be able to answer that?
Yeah, I think he's convinced that he could be like a Balak of the time, like that number 8 that is actually a 10. I think the idea is for him to make those runs late into the box, like we saw at Brentford when he scored that goal late in the game on that Saka cross, for example. I think this is very much the idea, as well as, you know, participating in the build-up play. So I think they ask him a lot, which I think is complicated, and I think that's why he's taking it in. But I think he will be successful. He will get there. But for example, people forget that out of position is one of Arsenal's best players this season in terms of ball recovery, how high he recovers the ball, duels won, all of that. And maybe for some people that doesn't matter so much. I can understand if you don't really like stats out of position for your team or for a team. I think this matters a lot to Arteta and to the way this team is playing. So I don't think all is bad with Havertz. It's just now we are now in January. So he's been here 6 months. And maybe after 6 months he should be better than he is. I don't know, but I've got no doubt that Arteta is convinced that this is a position for him.
How do you feel about Arteta basically came out and he said, I think the quote was, or whatever, he talked about how they played well against West Ham and didn't deserve to lose and lost, and here they were terrible. But he says, we're going to go again. And I think the quote was, with new players, and he said, no, with the same players, meaning... He certainly came out and said he doesn't expect moves in January. You said if there's opportunities.
Yeah.
Is there anybody at Arsenal that you think they would like to move on? I look at somebody like Thomas Partey, who has disappeared. Maybe he'll pop up in Africa for the Africa Cup of Nations. Maybe not. I'm assuming that's one salary that you would very happily
move on.
He hasn't figured it all this season. You know my views on him overall as a player. Elneny, they extended. I think Elneny can contribute as an alternative. There's been talk of shifting Kivior and bringing somebody else in to replace him, because Kivior has a market because he's a left-footed center back.
And I think he wants to play more, which is a fair point.
Is this basically it? If we do see movement, it's going to be one of those guys? Is there somebody
maybe,
else?
Unless someone
mentioned?
Comes for an Nketiah, a Smith Rowe,
Smith Rowe on Arsenal. Nobody's going to give you Smith Rowe. Has an
no,
Arsenal
no. That's
contract.
What I'm saying. I don't know if there's a market for them.
Right.
If someone comes in, if Crystal Palace wants a number 9 and they come for Nketiah with a good offer, I would suspect that Arsenal look at it and see what they do, and if they can replace Nketiah, for example, or Smith Rowe, or Vieira, or Kivior. I would suspect they have already a plan in place for who could come next, and they would do that. But if there's no sale, I don't think anybody comes. And I think in a way Arteta is very happy with the squad. I don't think Arteta sees the number 9 as a debate. I think he needs a number 9 that is like Gabriel Jesus, because the style of this team and the way they play is built around a number nine. Not, it doesn't have to be Gabriel Jesus, but a number nine with that skill set, with Gabriel Jesus' skill set. That's it. You put Osimhen in that team, he might score some goals, of course he will, but he won't participate in the build-up play in the game like Gabriel Jesus does. And right now, this team is not built for a Osimhen number nine, it's built for a number nine with the skill set that Gabriel Jesus has, which is dropping deep, taking, touching the ball a lot, pretty much being everywhere, link up the play. And again, if you look at the West Ham game, there's the Saka header in the first half that Areola saves. This cross is from Gabriel Jesus. Osimhen never puts this cross in. Osimhen is not even there where Gabriel Jesus is there to put the cross in, right? Right. We've seen Osimhen giving assist to Kvaratskhelia the other day.
Yeah, great, but in a different context.
But yeah, not same. On the other hand, however, where I'm with you, in the second half of that West Ham game, there's a header for Gabriel Jesus that is saved by Areola. I think Osimhen probably scores that goal. Or you would expect a nine like Osimhen to score that goal. So it's a debate of what really you need from a number nine, or what you want your number nine to play like and be like and have the qualities.
I think what I struggle with is, and I suspect this is, ideally, this would be Arteta's nirvana. When you speak of Gabriel Jesus dropping off and participating in the build-up play, in Havertz and Odegaard, you've got two people who could easily run past him. And maybe this is what he wants and what we've seen them do. Odegaard scored a lot of goals last season. Havertz, we've just talked about. I don't think that kind of automatic flow is there yet. I know Havertz has just arrived. And I think, and obviously Gabriel Jesus had that long spell when he was injured. And by the way, I take your point, but when Eddie plays, it's completely different from Gabriel Jesus.
Yeah,
he can't do what Gabriel Jesus does. He doesn't even try to do it, right? And I think that's kind of the conundrum that you're in. If Gabriel Jesus could up his output somehow. And I think back to what, you know, I think back to what Pep Guardiola said about Gabriel Jesus, where it's about Jesus versus Ferran Torres, right? That was the context of it. He says Jesus's natural tendency is always to find space, and that often means run away from the goal. Whereas Torres is, in his view, and again, it's dated and whatever, was to run towards the goal. And I think if Arteta can crack that, then Arsenal go to the next level. And look, but that said,
but again, if you share the goals, then there's not even a debate on number nine like last season. But then if this season you score less, your goal scorer is Saka with six, I think, including three pens or something like that in the league. That's just in the league. Then the next one is, I'm not even sure. So you've got Gabriel Jesus on three in the Premier League, I think. Martinelli hasn't scored much. Odegaard neither. Maybe Odegaard is on four, something like that. Havertz would be on three. But potentially you've got players who could easily have, let's say, 15 for Jesus, maybe 15 for Saka, 10 Martinelli, 10 Odegaard, 10 Havertz, and then a few from your defenders, this is okay. The problem is, if you don't share them and they're not on that level, then, it could become a problem.
All right, so our producer, Freddie, wanted us to do percentages. I said, look, we're going to look stupid. Liverpool are playing tonight and whatever. But then again, it's New Year's Day. It's one day of the year where we can look foolish. I want to do this slightly differently.
Okay.
All right? So I'm just going to mention the team, and you tell me if they can win the title. Don't give me percentages yet, right? So it should be easy. Liverpool?
Yes.
Manchester City?
Yes.
Arsenal?
Yes.
Villa?
Yes.
Ooh. Spurs?
Yes. They're all in 3 points, so they
Manchester
can all
United?
Win the title. No.
Chelsea?
No.
Okay.
Right. No one else. He's those five. One of those fives.
Liverpool, Arsenal, City, Villa, and Spurs.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go first on this, and I am going to give City a 40% chance of winning the title.
I agree.
I'm going to give Liverpool a 25% chance of winning the title, and at the risk of being like a little stupid, because they could be, well, actually, if they win tonight, they're only 3 points clear, but still. I'm going to give Arsenal a 25% chance. I'm going to give Villa a 3% chance. And Spurs a 7% chance. 7% for Spurs sounds high, doesn't it?
Okay, no, I'm going to make an amendment. I'm going to give Spurs a 3% chance as well, and increase Liverpool and Arsenal to 27% each. How's that? City 40%, Liverpool and Arsenal 27%, Villa and Spurs 3%. Happy with that?
So I'm going to do City 35%.
Mm-hmm.
Liverpool and Arsenal 27 like you. And then the rest divided by Villa and Spurs.
Interesting. So you actually, you believe in Ange and Unai, huh?
Not much, because that's...
But you believe more than I do.
Well, slightly more, but not much more.
That's much more. That's interesting. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Arsenal. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester City moved to third, 2 points off the top after their 2-0 win over Sheffield United. Jules, is inevitability setting in, buoyed by becoming world champions again?
Yeah, I think...
You're not impressed because it's Everton and Sheffield United.
Yeah, so there's a bit of that, maybe. No, there's a bit of that. And especially the first half against Everton wasn't good, but the second half was great.
Everton are good.
Yeah. What I'm more excited about, really, in all of this, I think the Club World Cup, people say it's a Mickey Mouse competition, people don't understand anything.
People are stupid.
This is. I think he really boosted them, and Pep talked about that. What I'm really excited about is to see what happens with Phil Foden and the number 10 battle. Because at some point, we will have a number 10 battle. Because when Erling Haaland comes back, do you play Alvarez behind him?
No.
Do you play Foden behind him?
No, you play Kevin De Bruyne. Who's
do you play
fit?
Kevin De Bruyne
and
behind
now he's got
him?
Longer hair.
But why would you not play Phil Foden behind him when Phil Foden is so good as a number 10, which we told Gareth Southgate forever, and Gareth Southgate was still like, well, you can't play centrally because you don't know much football, Gareth. Well, who do you play? No, this is why I'm more excited to see what Pep does when everybody is fit and who plays where.
Good
but
point.
They are options. Juventus pulled within 2 points at the top of Serie A with a 1-0 win over Roma. As my boy Adrien Rabiot, Paris-born and bred, scores the only goal. They're not going away, Gab.
They're not going away. This is funny against Roma because you imagine like sort of this massive war of attrition, right?
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, immovable object versus a movable object, and it was like that for a lot of the game. Roma again, very. You know, very Dybala dependent. You know,
that outside of his foot that just goes wide.
I thought you would enjoy that. Other than that, you play three midfielders who are just there to destroy. You can't find room for Lorenzo Pellegrini. So inevitably, it's going to be tough. You're going to have to get a goal. Dybala's going to have to do something to win. And the problem is when you try to play that way, given that Juventus have been playing that way for like the last 30 years, it's going to be tough. But. Yeah. We saw Kenan Yildiz, I thought, again.
Yeah, I love him.
He looks really, really good, really young. If you're, you know, and look, much as I don't like giving a leg of credit, look, in the end, he said he's got lemons, he's making lemonade. Yildiz looks like he can contribute.
Yeah, I agree.
Vlahovic, also, he benched him, then he brings him back, and I thought he contributed too, well against the three defenders, set up the goal. So, I think you feel pretty good about this.
Yeah, but Rabiot is the king, obviously.
Oh, yeah, it's all about the Rabiot. Liverpool kick off against Newcastle in a few hours as we're recording this on New Year's Day, Jules. But in the meantime, Aston Villa are level with them at the top of the table after beating Burnley 3-2 thanks to a late Douglas Luiz penalty, which our man Vincent Kompany didn't like, but I'm sure LME has no issue with.
Yeah.
Is Emery a little bit lucky?
I'm not sure it was a pen, really. That was really soft on John Duran. Yeah, I think they were lucky. I expected them, especially when Sonderberg got his red card for Burnley, that they were going to play for 40 minutes with 10 men. I thought, this is it. Villa is just going to bliss them. And instead, not at all. And
Diego Carlos also quite lucky too.
That was a handball every day of the week. But he makes movement with his arm. You could see.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that at all. And to be fair to Burnley and give them credit, it's the first team I see that really handles the offside trap really well, because Foster scores, obviously, being onside on the high line. There's a couple of other times where they beat it again but didn't score. So I thought they had worked really well, and they deserved the point, Burnley, easily.
That guy Odegaard, by the way, is a player and a half.
Paris born and bred.
You know, without Luca Colaiosho, they're going to pride of Norwalk.
But you got, but my guy turns up too. You know.
Yeah, your guy's good too.
Back to that Juve-Roma game, Gabby. Dusan Vlahovic was racially abused by visiting Roma supporters. Do you expect action?
We use the term racial abuse. Obviously, it's not racial abuse. The dude is white. It's territorial abuse, discriminatory abuse. It's a catch-all thing. They've had it before, yeah. They call him a gypsy, and I think it's entirely fair to be lumped together, because this is a part of the population that's been that's been discriminated against for many years, not just in Italy, but around Europe. I don't even know, and I don't even know if this is the right term. Some people use the word traveler. Some people use the term Romani people. I don't care. I don't even know if Vlahovic is a part of that community or not. I don't think he is, actually.
I don't think he is either.
But you can't do that.
All the people from the Balkans, they call them that, right? Because we saw that with other Croatian or Serbian.
Not all of them, but some of them. We saw with Mihailovic, we saw with Juric. You can't do this. You cannot do this. And it's interesting, because at Juve Stadium, they have cameras up the wazoo. They used it to ban their own supporters who had abused Romelu Lukaku, of course.
And
Magic Mike. I want to see them take action against the visiting fans as well. I suppose Juve could ban them from their stadium, maybe. I don't know. But this is now up to the league. They should have all the footage. You should have all the information that they need. And ban the individuals. And Roma, I expect them to distance themselves as well. Now, we had to go there. I left it as late in the show as I could. But Manchester United lose again. 2-1 away to Nottingham Forest. A lot of absentees. No Hoyland's on. But you got any positives for me?
Why? What would I be positive? Well, because Amad Diallo came on and actually looked decent.
Here's your answer on the right. No more Antony ever. Diallo on the right. Garnacho on the left.
Where's Rashford?
He can play through the middle. Or Hoyland. Maybe Hoyland will come back. Or
I thought it was a bad performance, terrible. But we said, we warned you, people. We said it's not because you come back against Villa that you suddenly become a good team and that Ten Hag becomes a great manager. This is not, it just doesn't work like this. And yet, I just don't understand what they did in that game, what the idea was. Why do you take Kobbie Mainoo out at halftime? So he's the only six that you have in this team. You replace him with another number 8 in Scott McTominay. So you've got Eriksen and McTominay supposedly protecting your back four.
By the way,
and then you concede two goals that are exactly the same, with so much space at the edge of the box for Dominguez and for Gibbs White. I mean, what do you expect
about McTominay? I take your point. An attacking midfielder, you leave the hole, whatever, right? But dude, Scott, if you're listening, you are a reserve on this Manchester United team. You love the club. I'm assuming Ten Hag told him to come on and sit in front of the back four. If he didn't, then Ten Hag made a big foolish mistake. I expect McTominay to be able to adapt. He's played center half in the past, right? You could say it's not his best position, not his natural position. That's fine. I'm not going to build my team around McTominay. So if you want to play, you have to help. So it's one of two things. Either Ten Hag did not tell him to go and sit in front of the back four, in which case Ten Hag is wrong, or McTominay came on and said, I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm a 10. Look at me, right? And as simple as that.
Yeah, well, it's got to be one of those two things. I don't know why he took Kobbie Mainoo out at halftime. It's just beyond me. No, Lautaro Martinez and Inter are headed away to Genoa. 1-1, Gab. I guess the good news is that Marco Arnautovic finally scored for Inter.
Yes, after 47 games, something like that, dating back 10 years. Everybody's down now all of a sudden. Oh, look, Inter are not Lautaro dependent. Turam had a bad game.
Yeah.
And simple as. I think they still had the better chances. Genoa aren't terrible. They're a good team. You're not going to win every game.
Juve drew at Genoa 2-1-1.
Yeah, I'm not I'm not flipping out over this, and I don't think people should. Tottenham beat Bournemouth 3-1, which means Ange Postecoglou is now just a single point behind Arsenal. Is it weird to you that they could see the 24 shots on goal? I saw the stat.
Yeah,
it was a
24. And Spurs themselves had 12.
That's so weird, huh?
The away team had twice more shots in the game.
A lot of bad shots.
Yeah, a lot of bad. I was going to say. It's not the edge, it's not high. But still, but this is what's going to happen because it's very open with Ange, especially when you're out, where you have no Romero, no Van de Ven, and you play, you know, with our boy Ben Davies, a centre back, but Emerson Royal. So I think there will be always a lot of things happening in their games. The most important, even if he was not always perfect that game, is that they won it before Son goes away at the Asia Cup, which is a massive blow, of course, for them, not to have him for potentially between two to five games. But this is the way it is. But at least they won that on the back of the heavy defeat at Brighton. This is what they needed. So well done for reacting that way, even if it was maybe not the best Ange ball that we saw this season.
And Richarlison scored again. Maybe he'll become the goal scorers that they'll need when Son is gone.
Carlo Ancelotti is staying at Real Madrid. It's the big news of the start of this year. He's extended his contract until 2026, which means he won't be taking charge of Brazil this summer. We told you. What do you make of it?
2026, there's a World Cup that summer. His contract ends just before the World Cup.
Surely he can't do
that. Look, my thought's very simple. You can behave like a grown-up and like a gentleman and like a nice guy. Very, very clear from the start. He was talking to Brazil because his contract was expiring. He said he loves Real Madrid, and if they gave him a new deal, he would strongly consider it, which means he would take it.
Yeah.
And Real Madrid decided to give him a new one. It's not a big deal. All these clubs, these comms people, these PR people tying themselves up to not. Just be honest. Be direct to both sides. I think the guy, Aguinaldo, who was the president of Brazilian FA, now he's been suspended. He may or may not come back. He's suspended for administrative reasons, incidentally. Maybe that might have changed things one way or the other. I think he was honest and straight up from the start. And we knew that. So he wasn't playing one off the other or whatever. If the results had been terrible, then Florentino wouldn't have taken him. Does mean Xabi Alonso is going to have to wait a little while longer.
A little bit longer. And who's going to go to Brazil?
Raul.
José Mourinho. Imagine that.
Can you imagine?
I would love that.
No, what if Xabi Alonso went to Brazil?
Oh, my God.
That'd be cool. Chelsea win back-to-back games for only the second time this season as they beat Luton away 3-2. Jules, it's the Cole Palmer show.
Yeah.
But they were sweating at the end. And how about the XG in this game? 2.58 for Luton to 1.25. It's no wonder Thiago Silva not happy.
Not happy at all at the end. We saw him despite the win. His face said it all, I thought. And I'm going to say what I said to you again. And it's a win, so you take it, of course. And right now, Chelsea, the position that Chelsea are in, they can't really be too picky on it's a win. Take it. But it was not a good win. And I thought after the 70th minute, when Luton had a goal disallowed, when they were 3-0 down, you could see that the momentum of that game has shifted. So as a manager, if I'm the Chelsea manager, and I can clearly see that my team now already hadn't been great, although they were 3-0 up, but they hadn't been great, I can see that now the game is slipping away, that the other team is on the front foot, that they're better than us, that they're coming at us. I do something, right? Do I stay like this, doing nothing? I don't think so.
Thanks.
What did Poch do? Nothing. Thank you
former
very much.
PSG manager.
Thank you very much. Christian Pulisic scores the only goal as Milan down Sassuolo 1-0 to consolidate their third place in the table. Any sign of progress?
I think there were signs of progress in the team. It was tight, but Bennacer, I think, is a really important player for them. They still have injuries. You play Teo Hernandez and Simon Kjær at the back. What do you expect? But Pulisic quietly having a very good season. 6 goals and 4 assists at the halfway mark, and he's only the third option up front. Jules, let's go there. January.
No.
Kylian Mbappe's contract is up in less than 6 months, which means he could be signing with somebody right now.
Yeah, but he won't.
He could be signing for Arsenal. What do you know?
Yeah.
Oh, no, but Gabriel Jesus is there, so that would be tough. Now, thoughts? Getting nervous?
No. Look at me. I'm cool as a cucumber.
I'll be asking you this question.
It's fine.
Pretty much every single...
If you want to, but leave us alone. Napoli... Napoli.
Okay. No, you want to move on? Let's talk Masters.
Nothing
disaster.
Is happening now. Napoli are held at home by Monza, 0-0. It's another disappointment for your friend Walter Mazzarri.
My friend.
So, President Aurelio De Laurentiis did something quite unusual after the game.
So, Aurelio De Laurentiis is one of the most unpredictable people around, yeah. But he did something, or he came out and he apologized. He'd already said that he should have, you know, like, oh, the day I appointed Rudy Garcia,
I knew it was a mistake.
Sack him straight away. He didn't quite say he wants to sack the master of disaster either. But he said, it's my responsibility. I make the decisions. The buck stops with me. You know, I'd love it. I'd love it if some of these owners who make stupid decisions go out and face the music. Simple as. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. United are noted for their one-year contract extension options that for a while, I don't know if it's going to continue, but they put into every contract. Yeah. The Athletic reports that they will extend Victor Lindelof for another season, but not Raphael Varane. Does this make sense to you, Jules?
I mean, Raphael Varane earns more money than Victor Lindelof. He's also a better player. If you don't want Varane anymore, just say it. And just everybody knows he can already plan what he's going to do. You don't want him in January. You want him gone for the season. Tell him, and he will find another club. And trust me, there will be big clubs after him too. For Victor Lindelof, what's the point of keeping him? To preserve
his transfer.
Yeah, warm the bench. This club is just beyond me.
So I would assume, and I'm going to give United the benefit of the doubt here, even though I probably shouldn't. I would assume it has to do with the fact that Varane, obviously he's not Ten Hag's cup of tea, right? He dropped him before and whatever, and then he had the mystery flu, you know. And if I'm Varane, I look at this and I say, man, I can't get into the side. Lisandro's out. I mean, I'm assuming Varane looks at these people objectively and says, hey, I am substantially better than all the center backs, probably even including little Lisandro, but whatever, you want to put him on my level or even ahead of me, that's fine. But I'm better than McGuire and Evans and Lindelof, right? If he doesn't play me, I'm old, I should find another club. But the problem from United's perspective is, are we sure Erik ten Hag is going to be the manager the rest of the season? We're not, right?
No, we're not. You're right.
So the new guy might come in and say, wait a minute, I had Varane here. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Now he's gone, and now I'm stuck with Lindelof.
Yeah.
Or Evan, you know. So that's the issue.
Yeah. The Italian government have made changes to tax law that have made Italian clubs very angry, with Milan chief executive Giorgio Forlani saying that it was a dark day for Serie A. Gab, what could he be talking about? What's so bad?
So basically this is one of those things which is bad for Serie A. But I think is good for taxpayers, good for normal people, good for ethics. And Forlani speaking from the perspective of the guy who runs a Serie A club, if I were in his shoes, I would say exactly the same thing. It's bad news for them.
Yeah.
Basically, they passed a law 3 years ago, something like that, where to stimulate growth, they said, look, we want to attract high-end executives to work in Italy, make it easier for Italian companies to hire talented foreign executives and so on.
Yeah.
And so we're going to give you essentially a really, really big tax break, because if you make more than a certain amount of money, I think it's €1 million a year, if that's your compensation, you're only fully taxed on half of that. And the other half, your tax, I think, is 15%. So essentially, rather than being taxed full whack, you basically
That's a huge advantage compared to other countries.
Yeah, there's some stipulations. You have to be new to Italy. You have to be there for 2 years to take advantage of this, blah, blah, blah. But it's a big giveaway. So Serie A club said, Romelu right. Lukaku's kind of like an executive, right? Which he's not, obviously. So they took advantage of it with footballers because, you know, they are the other high earners. So they've closed this loophole. They've closed this opportunity. I think ethically it's the right thing to do. It's going to hurt Italian clubs. Now they're going to have to find this money.
Yeah.
Jules, I didn't mean to bum you out earlier with that Mbappe question. So to make up for it, tell me about Gabriel Moscardo and Lucas Bilardo. And not just two guys with assonance.
No, yeah. I mean, they're two young Brazilians that PSG have just signed.
What is the Brazilian Declan Rice? I read it in...
Moscardo is 18.
So he's the Brazilian Declan Rice because he's tall and...
Because he plays similar way. And in the same
Moscardo,
position.
Moscardo, baby, no?
Not no, yet. No. It doesn't work exactly the same. And guess what? He's injured already. He won't be able to play for the next 3 months. So here you go. I mean, this is my club for you. Lucas Berardo is a left-footed centre-back. We mentioned Kivior before. Very promising. 20. So Moscardo is 18. 20. They both cost 20 million euros. I mean, there's a long history of Brazilian players and PSG, all of that, blah, blah, blah. I just thought right now they need more experience than youth again, especially in midfield. Imagine playing Moscardo and Zaire Emery, a 17-year-old, soon 18-year-old because Zaire Emery is 18 in February.
But you also have little Vitinha, you've got other options.
Yeah, but it's not good enough in midfield. We've said that before, we've established that. Is Moscardo going to change the midfield kind of dynamic? I'm not so sure, especially now that he's injured for 3 months. He's hardly arrived in Paris and he's already out. I mean,
what about Bilardo though, right? Oh no, Kimpembe is coming now.
Virtual Kimpembe is not coming back.
What about virtual Kimpembe?
I'm quite worried for Kimpembe, yeah. So let's see what Bilardo has to offer, really.
These are Luis Campos guys, yeah?
Yeah, and Bilardo can't be as slow as Skriniar. This is not possible.
Did I tell you about Milan Skriniar?
No, you did.
This is what gets me. Anybody who saw... I sense a rant coming on. You know, Skriniar, he's obviously has people who speak to the media, and they built him up going back to when he was good at Inter. Remember, he's linked to Manchester United, blah, 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 70 million, 80 million, 100 million. What I don't get, and look, ultimately he left because he wasn't going to extend his contract, but you could see Inter last season. Look, they got really, really good when... When this dude stopped playing for them.
Yeah, he had a bad back as well.
He has a bad back and everything and a bad head. Come on, man.
He was a free agent. I can see what PSG took him, but yeah. I've got high hopes for Bilardo and Moscardo, to be fair. FIFA have announced that they are suspending their new agent regulation, which were due to come into effect this January. Gab, why are they doing this?
Because they have to.
Oh.
So basically, there's two key elements to the new new regulations that FIFA approved. One is that you can no longer represent all three sides in a transaction. As we've told you many times before, when a player changes clubs, there's usually a buying agent who represents a club. There's usually a selling agent who represents the other club. And there's the player agent. Clearly, they're all working for different purposes, so you would imagine if football were a normal business, they'd all be paid for the people they're working for. I said football's not normal, so you had situations where you had people who were getting paid from all three sides in the transactions. Now that you can get paid from two sides in the transactions, not three, under these regulations, and on top of that, they put a cap on commissions.
Which is the biggest issue here, right?
Which is the single biggest issue. I'm on the record saying this. I think the cap and commissions is completely wrong and unjustified. I think agents should be allowed to earn as much as they want from the deal. But we need to have transparency. They should have pushed the transparency angle where I want to know so that I as a fan or I as a media or I as a shareholder of a club can go to my club and say, hey, why did when Moscardo and Bilardo moved to Paris Saint-Germain, why did you pay Julian Lorenz $50 million in commission, right?
Because I'm worth it?
Because he's worth it, right. And what did he do during that? Now we had a situation where, no, we can only play Julian Lorenz, was it 3% or whatever, 12% with but whatever. A small percentage, but we'll never know how much it is because we're not allowed to do that. So anyway, they've been subject to a million lawsuits. Agents in courts in Germany and Spain ruled that these are basically they're not compliant with European law. Yeah. And so FIFA said, all right, well, we're going to suspend this until we get an opinion from the ECJ. I think they're going to get rid of the cap. I would love them, if they want to do something meaningful, introduce the transparency side, but let agents earn whatever they can negotiate. Gio Reyna has started twice as many games for the U.S. national team this season, 4, than he has for Borussia Dortmund, 2, and one was in the Pokal. Bild are reporting that his dad and agent met with the club to discuss his future. His contract is up in 2025. What would you suggest, Jules? Because
there can't be any discussions, Gab. He has to go, and he has to go now. He can't waste more time now. I looked it up. He played 229 minutes in the Bundesliga so far. Can you imagine? This is nothing. He's a young player. He needs to play. He's a talented kid, too. So it's not if it was rubbish and you said, you know what, you're lucky to be in the squad anyway. Like, stay there. Get your money, get the few minutes that you can. But no, he can do better than that. I think he should. It's too late now to stay. You're not going to play the second half of the season. There's no way Terzic is going to change.
Why?
What
he
happened.
Keeps rotating his wingers constantly. Everybody rotates in and out except for him.
If Alan played him before, he's not going to play him now. Just go now. Even if he's on loan for 6 months to show what you can do, and then in the summer 2024, you get a transfer somewhere. Maybe where you were on loan before, whatever, it doesn't matter so much. But you need to play, and you're not going to play in Dortmund. So go.
So I think this is, it's a great point. There's no question. He is still, to this day, despite everything that's happened, probably the second most important player on the U.S. national team, right? He is orders of magnitude better than everybody else, not named Christian Pulisic, even adjusting for positions. Yeah. I mean, watch Matt Turner again this weekend. Seriously, I wonder, who is important on this team other than Pulisic and Reyna, right?
I know.
Difficult. What I would absolutely hate is for Dortmund to say, well, wait a minute, we don't want to send you on loan because then in the summer you're only going to have a year left and then you'll be worth less than... You know, then obviously that's going to affect if you do well or
no. Yeah, no.
I think the solution here is extend his contract for a year or get a club option to extend it for a year so that they can preserve his value and then send him
still
on
loan. Yeah.
If he doesn't go for that, then fine. Go sit there and play 3 minutes against Heidenheim and effectively rob. Because the other thing with Dortmund is, A, Dortmund aren't very good this season, right? They're fifth.
Yeah. They're very inconsistent.
B, they have so many winger attacking midfielder types. I don't know how they put this team together. But between Adeyemi and Brandt and Bino Gittens and Royce, and it goes on and on and on. Daniel Malin, right? How's he going to get on the pitch?
I know exactly. For me, there's just one thing to do is to get out. That's it. Maita Molango, the head of the players' union here in England, said that fixture congestion is so bad that they're actually thinking about legal action. Gab, it seems that Pep Guardiola and other managers are in agreement with him. What do you think?
So I think the issue here is something that only affects elite players, right? Because further down, players want to play more games because they want to make more money. Also because they're not playing 60 games a season or whatever. I think we need actual science in this. I know both FIFA and the PFA produce endless papers about blah, 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 and with the opinions. That's fine. I think we also could do something more useful, which is look back. Look back 20 years ago, were more players getting injured for longer? You know, I can actually get real numbers, and then you can make your case. I think he's right. The players control this. But the question is, it's got to be a specific group of players. And this is the problem. The players' union covers all players from all pros, right? This is a problem that affects the guys at the very, very top because they're the ones who are playing too many games. It's not that people are playing 40 games a year. So they have to think carefully about this. I think one solution, I brought it up before, it seems really wacky, but if it's supported by science, could be a solution. You know, air traffic controllers, truck drivers, they have mandatory rest. Right, they can only work for so many hours.
You drive for 8 hours, and then you need to take a pause.
Then you have to take a break. Yeah. Same thing, airline pilots, whatever. Right? Maybe it's going to be the same thing for footballers. Maybe if you've played X amount of minutes, certain circumstances, blah blah blah, you have to sit. And then maybe managers like Pep need to then, well, he's all right, well, maybe this is the game where I drop Haaland for somebody else, blah, blah, blah. Maybe this is the way forward. I don't know. But it's obvious that the players need to come out, and it's the players of the big clubs, and they're the ones who can make a difference here. And I don't want to hear this hypocrisy of just blaming FIFA and UEFA for, oh, blaming them. Because, yeah, their job is to make more money. Your job is to... Everybody's job, everybody's got a role to play, right?
Yeah.
And you can't just go and blame. You have to take action, and you have to defend your corner. So hopefully it comes to some resolution for the player's health. But I would like to see more science, more research, and more actual facts rather than generic blame left, right, and center.
That's a fair
and
point.
Also, call people out. If Pep Guardiola makes all the money he makes, it's also because Manchester City plays all the games that they do. Simple as. Atletico Madrid are reportedly seriously considering signing Mason Greenwood this summer. Jules, he's done well at Getafe on loan.
Yeah.
How should Manchester United react?
I think Manchester United want him out anyway, surely. I don't think, we said that before, I don't think he can play for that club again after everything that happened. So it's good for him that he's playing again, seems to enjoy his football in the Bordalas team, by the way, which can't be easy all the time. But you're right, he's doing well.
Imagine going to work every day and seeing Bordalas.
So yeah, I don't think there's really a future for him in England right now or at United. So once the loan expires, they will look for a potential buyer or another loan or something like that. And then if Atletico want him, then so be it. I don't know. Is he ready now to go at that kind of level? I'm not so sure, to be fair. I don't really know where he fits in that team either.
At Atleti?
Yeah, but apart from off the bench, but he can't be a start. I don't see him as a starter for this team right now, the way Morata and Griezmann are playing together, even the impact that Correa is having.
And they still have Memphis too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I
don't know, but
I almost think this Atletico thing is a way to draw attention to the fact that he could move, right? Because those four guys we mentioned, none of those guys have a real market to be sold or moved on. I don't know what their contractual situations are off the top of my head, right? But Griezmann's not going to leave.
No, he's going to
Morata, you assume, isn't going to leave.
No.
Correa might have a market. There was a chance a few years back, but he seems to be fine where he is. Memphis is the only one, but again, he seems happy in Madrid. So I do think what screws up Mason Greenwood forever, and I think people are okay with second chances, but if he has something to admit culpability for, he can't admit it, because otherwise the police investigation that is what's so screwed up in this thing.
Yeah.
From United's perspective, you can't have him back.
Yeah.
If you have to eat his contract, eat his contract.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Inter have been busy extending contracts, Gab. Enrique Mkhitaryan, Fede DiMarco, and Matteo Darmian all getting new deals. Well done to them. Happy Christmas.
Yeah, so I don't, you know, my thoughts on extending players over the age of 30. Darmian was going to be a free agent at the end of the season. He's fit. He's contributing. It's one more year to 2024. I'm okay with that. Mkhitaryan is two more years to 2026. The thinking with Mkhitaryan is also they were able to sneak that in. Remember, we talked earlier
before
about the law, right?
Slow, yeah.
So they're kind of getting him as a cheapie. He's 31 now, I think. So it's not crazy. Di Marco's the guy who deserves more money.
Your guy,
a lot of
course.
Money to give. But they gave him a one-year extension and a bump. Fair enough for him. So, well done.
Yeah.
Postecoglou told the Spurs would pick up a central defender this January. Look, again, manager being honest with the media.
That's good.
Not being all like, well, it's none of your business, all the club. We don't comment on speculation. No. Media reports suggest they're linked to Genoa's Radu Dragusin, who's Romanian and scored against Inter this weekend.
Yeah.
And Nice's Jean-Claire Todibo, who's obviously done very well after his early career snafus,
yes.
Even though he has a girl's name.
It's not a girl's name.
Claire.
Jean-Claire. There's no E at the end of Claire.
I know, but it's funny to say. Okay, oh, whatever. Who would you go for?
Todibo, 100%. One, because he's Paris born and bred.
Of course.
Two, because we played in the same team, in the same club. Not team, because I'm obviously older than him. But the same club, Les Lilas. Big shout out, big up to Les Lilas in north of Paris. We had the same coach, all of that. So I love him very dearly. And also, I think I like Dragusin, and he's having a great season with Genoa. It's very much all about the physical battles, right? The duels with Dragusin.
Yeah.
I think Todibo
is like getting Romero. And like one guy gets sent off, the other guy gets come in, he gets sent off. And, you know, like.
I think Todibo is a more complete defender. He can play more with the ball, can come out with the ball. But I like Dragusin as well. And Dragusin is slightly younger, 21 too. But yeah, I would love to see Todibo and another Paris born and bred guy in London. And in
I have a question. We talked about Varane and Lindelof and so on. I'm just wondering, like, do you think Manchester United's new minority owner is unfamiliar with the people who own Nice and unfamiliar with Jean-Claire Todibo? That shouldn't they be thinking about him?
I think they are thinking about him. I think he was on the shortlist before Ineos got involved at United anyway. So him, Kefren Thuram, Terem Moffi, who are probably Nice's three best players right now, are all on United's list. And United, I think, will have money to spend in January. So I would not... Todibo can also go to Manchester United in January.
Are you pretty sure that once this happens and Brailsford has a more role, Brailsford's not going to suffer another system error like you had at Nice when he went for Aaron Ramsey and Schmeichel and all
with Ian Moody? I doubt Ian Moody is going to be involved at United, but I don't know yet. We don't know yet.
All right.
But no, I don't think so. FAA in Spain are reporting that Barcelona will sue the investment firm that bought a share of the media company. Apparently, they never send the money.
Yeah, what? So FAA, by the way, they're like the Reuters or the Associated Press
like
of Spain.
The agency.
Like, this is legitimate.
It's serious, it's not.
So if you remember, one of Laporta's levers was to sell 49% of Barcelona's media company, which used to run Barca Television, which might be coming back, apparently, and their kind of media business. They sold 49% to something called Orfeos and also to Socios.com.
Yeah.
There's a solid business. and then I think when they realized, like, wait, we bought 49% of what? Then they did a deal with this company called Libero, which is this German investment company, very imaginative name, and another company I've never heard of, which is Dutch, called Nipa, where they were going to buy 29% back. Now, according to Efe, this company Libero says, yeah, we'll pay you in installments, and they never sent the money.
Really?
So if this is true, obviously Barcelona very entitled to take legal action.
For sure, you can't do that.
I do wonder how much this company is actually... is actually worth.
Well, you don't think he's real, or you don't think he's like they have the money?
Well,
but surely if you're Barca, you don't sell to anybody. I imagine you and I saying to Barca, hey, yeah, we buy the 49%. Surely you do some due diligence, some work, you realize that they are solid or not solid, or serious or not serious.
It's odd because Libero apparently, I went on their website and they mentioned about 50 times on their website that they're listed on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. So there must be some regulation, there must be some assets, there must be. It's just odd that they haven't paid.
Yeah, very odd.
More Barca. Sport are linking. Sorry, this is a special one for you. Sport are linking Sergio Roberto, who is a free agent in June, with a move to Arsenal. Jules, I think I know what you're going to say, but come on. The guy can play right back, right? The guy can play in central midfield.
We were talking
before about sitting in front of the back four. You don't like Giorgi? Would you like Sergio Roberto?
I've only one thing to say. Well, two words. No comments. That's all I can say.
Xavi Ferrer says he's an attacking midfielder.
Oh, my God. Please stop with Sergio Roberto. Not to start the year. Inter are close to sealing a deal for... I never know how to say his first name.
I think it's Tejan.
Tejan. Buchanan from Bruges for around 8 million euros plus up to 4 in bonuses and commissions. Gab, some competition for Denzel Dumfries?
Yeah, I want to point out 4 million in commissions on an 8 million deal.
That's a lot.
That's good business.
We're
going back to FIFA regulations, right? I guess so. I mean, from what I'm told, and I've seen him on TV, when I've seen him, he's played as an attacking right back.
He has.
So... I'm told he's also,
country as well.
He's played as a right winger as well.
Yeah.
I think competition's good. I think Dumfries, I think it's an open secret that Inter's financial situation is still pretty horrendous. And
so he'll be sold, do you think?
If they don't renegotiate the deal with Oaktree, they're going to lose the club in May, right? Yeah. Simple as. So I don't know if this is setting it up or you're just, he's younger than Denzel Dumfries, so maybe there's some thinking there. He looks like a player. I think very fast, athletic players often have an impact.
So great move for him.
Inter could use that. It's a good move for him too, yeah. Fabio Carvalho's loan spell at Leipzig hasn't quite worked out, Jules.
Oh, my God.
So he's back in Liverpool.
How is Fabio Carvalho in this quick hit for the new year?
He's a major league. He's a Liverpool star. But it looks like he's going to go straight back out on loan again.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't. Which is sad. I was only joking. And Fabio Carvalho is a really good talent. But just Leipzig, Marco Rosa, that team with a lot of competition in his position, to be fair to him.
Is that why they spent $25 million on Elif Elmas so that they can have even more competition, spend a lot of money on guys?
Maybe he's more of a 10 than Elmas. I don't know why. Or maybe the new Carvalho would go back to Liverpool. So I just don't know why. I don't know why it didn't work out for him. I don't know if it was his, you know, attitude problem on his side or just didn't work out in this kind of structure. It looks like he's going to be probably going to the Championship now. The clubs that are linking to him, like Southampton, like Leicester, are really good Championship and, you know, obviously ex-Premier League teams. I'm not sure really there's a market for someone who hasn't played at all pretty much in 6 months, though. So this is the only issue I have on him now. Reports in Germany, Gab, are linking Borussia Dortmund with Chelsea's Ian Madsen, your friend. Does this make sense to you, Gab? And is he to play as a winger again? With all the others?
I think they have enough wingers at Borussia Dortmund. I think it's pretty obvious that Pochettino does not see Madsen as a viable left back.
No, he played him as like a left winger or right winger.
He played him as a left back. He played Malo Gusto at left back in the second half of that game against the horrible game against Palace.
Yeah.
You know, that's how. So he's not an option there, and he didn't want to let him go on loan. Madsen is a Chelsea homegrown product, so you can, whatever money you get for him, you can bank.
Yeah, straight away.
I think that's the thinking. It's the same thing with Conor Gallagher, right? People say like, oh, look, because, hey, it's pure profit when you...
Yeah.
When you sell these guys, accounting-wise, I think he can contribute. I think he did really well at Burnley last year. I think he's fast. He's not very big.
No.
Okay, fine.
That's
but,
for sure.
You know, they have enough big players with Di Sazi, who's the size of a building, so and whatever else. So
yeah.
And Cucurella, another big player.
Oh, my God.
Whatever. More Messi friends in Miami, Jules. Marcos Rojo has now been linked too.
Oh, those asados are going to be good, aren't they? All the boys there together. Tata Martino can come as well. And there'll probably be more. Marcos Rojo, who obviously went to Boca after his European career, to Boca, now linked with Inter Miami. I mean, I don't know. I guess what Messi wants, Messi gets. Maybe is it a bit of that?
I do wonder. I don't know how many DPs they can have. Well, I do. I wonder if at some point, if you keep adding all these old guys, not only are you spending money, but I'm wondering if some people might go, as Rojo might just say, screw it, I made enough money from Manchester United over the years, let me go here and, like, you know, I'll pay for...
Sergio Roberto as well can join them.
Sergio Roberto, yeah, well, Sergio Roberto would be natural
go.
Fit
he can
there.
Play right back and play.
Yeah, can you imagine reform? Wait, also, Gerard Pique is only sort of kind of retired.
True.
If he goes there... He can join too and maybe start the Kings League in South Florida.
True. I saw Puyol playing paddle the other day. He looked really fit. He can probably come back as well. Listen, we've got something here.
And look, Sergio Roberto's going to come. Chapi Ferrer, of course, is a big Sergio Roberto fan. Maybe he can give you a few minutes off the bench. You're still looking pretty trim. No?
Oh, my God. The Saudi Pro League announced that from next season, each club will be able to sign 10 non-Saudi players instead of the current 8. Okay. We saw that coming, didn't we?
We did. I put this in because people are like flipping out. Oh, look, the Saudis. You know, like there's like this. There's a number of people who have just drunk the Kool-Aid on Saudi Arabia, on the Saudi Pro League. It said, oh, like it's going to become, you know, it's going to become bigger than La Liga, second biggest league in the world. Blah, blah. Okay. We've seen the facts so far, right? The facts is that I don't know what attendances are like now. A month ago, they were actually less than the year before, which blows my mind because, oh, look, suddenly, you know, Benzema and all these other guys are here and Sadio Mane, whatever. But like, oh, look, I'm less interested in going to watch them, which makes no sense. Yeah. They don't understand. Whatever. But so they can. So the wrinkle here is, though, the two extra non-Saudi players they can sign, they have to be under 21s. And also, you can still only play eight on match days.
Yeah.
So I don't see how this really moves the needle. Yeah, you can chuck money at them. The other thing that we've seen is all these big money players are going to the same four clubs, plus a little bit. Some of them are going to Etifak to hang out with Jordan Henderson. But even then, if you look at the eight guys that Etifak has, you know, Jordan Henderson is the biggest star, right? Yeah. Not forgetting somebody.
And they lost eight in a row, something like that as well now.
Yeah, but Steven Gerrard under pressure, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
But I'm saying, when Jordan Henderson is your biggest star,
yeah,
the guy who's your eighth biggest star will be comparatively some dude you haven't heard of, right?
Yeah.
So, no, I don't think this is a thing. I don't think this moves the needle at all. Jules, all season long, I've been wondering where Hugo Lloris was and what he was up to. Now I know. After his little break, he's heading for Hollywood.
Oh, my boy. He texted me on whenever it was Wednesday or Thursday. He was so happy to go to LA, to LAFC.
Instead of going to Saudi Arabia, I'm shocked.
Well, no, but not just that. But not and for the last chapter of his career, of course, because he's 37. But after 11 years as Spurs in London, even if the last 6 months obviously were a little bit special because he was there, because he could not move in the summer, he just didn't find another club. So he was at the club training but not playing for 6 months. And now finally he can go back to his career and finish it in style, hopefully in one of the best clubs in MLS, who obviously lost the last final of the MLS Cup. And enjoy it. And I think he will bring his professionalism, he will bring that leadership. He's such a nice guy, the elegance, everything. I'm so happy for him, really happy for him.
I also like the fact that he didn't go and chase one last paycheck, because I don't know how much he's going to make at LAFC, but I'm 100% certain it's going to be less than he would have made in Saudi.
And the tribute he got from the Spurs fans, by the way, before the Bournemouth game on New Year's Eve was really beautiful, because he would be a club legend forever. So, no, well done to him. The Turkish Super Cup between Galatasaray and Fenerbahce was due to be played in Saudi Arabia, but was cancelled just a few hours before kickoff.
Okay, I got a couple things to say here. So the reason it was cancelled is it's the 100th anniversary of Kemal Atatürk, who made the modern Turkey, and he made a bunch of changes. He turned Turkey into a secular country. It's the 100th anniversary, I think, of him coming to power in 1923. Atatürk is still a revered figure, very much in Turkey. It's the reason why they don't write in Arabic and stuff like that in Turkey, right? Use the alphabet, did a bunch of things. They were going to wear T-shirts sort of remembering him. The Saudi authorities said, no, you can't wear those T-shirts because it's a political message. And so in the end, they said, fine, we're not playing. Now, wherever you stand on this, and was it a political message, what? In they don't like the fact that he was more secular or whatever, but whatever. Whatever the feelings are, I'm not going to get into that. That's a political thing. You knew. You can go to Wikipedia and find out it was the 100th anniversary. You knew ahead of time that Kemal Atatürk is perhaps the most important figure in Turkey for the last 150 years. He's the one guy both sides tend to agree on.
Yeah,
right?
But did they know that they were going to wear something in tribute of him?
You sorted out beforehand. And this is what I don't get, right? You, Turkish FA, are happy to take money from Saudi. And I'm gonna have a go at both sides, right? You're happy to take money for them to organize, because it's not like they will be paid their own way there, right? To organize this game and play in Saudi Arabia. There's a whole political element, too, because alliances, politics, whatever. But let's leave that to one side. You Saudis knew it was likely something like this was going to happen.
Yeah.
So unless somebody produces a contract, and maybe there is a contract, I mean, we'll find out, where he says, you cannot wear the Atatürk shirts, there can be no references to Atatürk, whatever. What did you think they were going to do? It's just so unnecessary.
Remember in the Asia Champions League, we had a problem like that. Was it Persepolis?
They went to Persepolis. Iran.
It was similar.
But that was different. I mean, that was in Iran, right?
Yeah.
And so Iran said, hey, our stadium, our leagues. Here, you're invited to play. I think this has turned into a political football from both sides. And I find it difficult to reconcile the fact that the Saudi, whoever made this decision, well, you're so insecure about a T-shirt,
yeah,
about a guy in a different country who died 50 years ago. You know, it's ugly. This is politics interfering with football, and whichever way you slice it, it's ugly. But Jules, hopefully we can leave that in 2023. Let's talk 2024 now, which is where we are. This brings us to an end, obviously, that we're going to be back because there's more Premier League action.
Of course.
There's La Liga action. So we're going to be back on Thursday. And until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.